come up to my second class, greasy fingers and stuff. They look like ZZ Top, some of these guys, and they're doing it. But they all came in and be like, oh, I don't know, dude. I can't touch my toes. They can't even sit cross-legged because their hips are so tight. So I'm in there trying to shove blankets under them, this type of stuff. But I tell them, like, it's not about touching your toes. That's not the goal. You have to reframe that. Think about lengthening. Can I get more length out of my spine? Can I stand up a little taller? Can I just take a few breaths? Just use this hour as a chance, particularly when I teach guys, can I just use this hour as an opportunity not to think about my to-do list, honey-do list, whatever things are coming at you during the day, and just let that go and just take an hour for yourself, take 30 minutes for yourself.
Welcome to Guys Talking Yoga, a podcast created to help men get into the practice of yoga by sharing the stories and paths of other guys. I'm your host, Derek Vandewalker, and today's guest is Larry Milburn. Larry is an award-winning filmmaker who has been involved as a producer and editor with both film and commercial production studios. He's also worked with some major ad agencies and brands over the past three decades. In this conversation, Larry shares his long path with yoga, beginning in his early 20s as a young actor and musician, and how he later reconnected with the practice in 2005 when he needed to fill a void in his life. Eventually, this curiosity and this path led him to become a deeply committed and passionate yoga teacher at a studio in Connecticut. So Larry and I hit a number of topics: yoga as a means to address bad habits, stuck relationships, aging bodies, and the reckoning poses, as Larry likes to call them, that help you face some of those challenges.
My yoga journey goes back to 1994, 95, something like that. I just recently moved out to Los Angeles and didn't know anything about yoga. Now, I say that I didn't know anything about yoga, but later on in these years, as my yoga journeys continued, I realized that there were seeds of yoga planted in my athletics that I didn't realize was yoga, which I'll just shine a light on in a second. But I basically moved out there. I was a young actor at the time, actor, musician, and had always three-letter varsity athlete in high school and did a little bit in college, not too much, but skiing, football, track and field, swimming, stuff like that. And grew up with flat feet, which always hurt my back, and things always just kind of hurt, never felt right. Had a bad injury my senior year of high school playing football, tore my Achilles, had to come back from that. And just there were just always a couple of things kind of going on. So I get to Los Angeles and signed up for a gym membership somewhere, right? And just dumping money into that. And that was my frame of reference. Like, you go to the gym, you spend time in the gym and all that kind of thing. And so that's what my friends did growing up and playing sports. So in Los Angeles, in an area called Hancock Park, there was a studio called the Center for Yoga. And I think I walked by it one day and there's a long staircase that goes up. And I was like, what's up in this joint? So I go up there. It's a quiet afternoon. There's two women standing at the desk. And I started, hey, you know, I've never done yoga. I don't even know what this is, but I got to find something because my body hurts. And man, sometimes I just want to get out of my body. And this woman, who later I would find out was the studio owner, said, no. She looked at me. She was like, no, you need to get into your body. And I was like, whoa, that's super crazy, you know? So I went in 95, 96. I went a few times, several times. I don't even really remember, but I remember my first couple of down dogs and all of the stuff that sort of came up, you know, those sort of holy shit moments that you have. Even in class today, when I teach, I call certain poses reckoning poses. Pigeon pose is one. A down dog can be a reckoning pose for people. And I think everyone finds their own little reckoning pose. And I say that because for me, a reckoning pose is something that brings up maybe your physicality, emotions, things in your life that you have to sort of face, right? And so at that time, 21, 22, it was bad habits. It was bad eating habits, bad physical habits, bad drinking habits, whatever it was. And these poses would bring those things out. Now, also, it's Los Angeles in the mid-90s, and there are gorgeous people in class and men and women, and there's 40 people in a room that should hold 20. And so part of it is you're kind of looking around like, what, who are these? And they're all half naked. And my head's bopping all around. I couldn't focus. It was just like totally crazy. But then slowly I kind of got into it and I drifted in and out. Literally for 10 or 15 years, they had a deal that was $99 unlimited a month. So I just paid that on top of my gym membership and I drop in whenever I could. And my best friends out there, who was actually my best friend growing up from back here, moved out there. He played football for Ithaca, super jock, more of the jock than I was. He gave me a hard time all the time. What do you mean yoga? All you're doing is stretching. That's not hard. Busting my balls all the time. So I would be like, well, why don't you come and try it? Because I'm barely keeping up in there. And then it just kind of came and went. It didn't really take hold until about 2005-ish, I would say. I had been dealing with some on and off atrial fibrillation, AFib, which is an arrhythmia of the heart, which I'd only had at that point maybe 3 or 4 episodes from the time I was 22 till 2005. And I was also going through kind of a breakup with somebody. And sort of while we were trying to figure that out, we said, hey, let's try this yoga thing over at Center for Yoga. She lived closer to it than I did. And we would go to this 6 o'clock in the morning class. And there was something about coming out at 7 a.m., having done some things, right? Whether that's a solid pose, a headstand against the wall, or a handstand against the wall. I came out and I felt strong. I felt good. I felt like I'd accomplished things. And so as this person and I started breaking up, I started going. And it started to fill a void. But because it was so cheap, they had this deal, I was trying every class. I would jump into classes probably, you know, levels higher. And at that time, they had them leveled out. So you could see, like, this is a level 1. And they'd give you a description, level 2, whatever. Or a level 1, 2. So I would try. I tried the Iyengar class. I don't think they offered Kundalini at the time, but I just tried every Hatha Yoga and Vinyasa Flow and Vini Flow and all these different things. Every different teacher I could go to, basics class, whatever. So that within 2 years, I was going every day, sometimes twice a day, and I had my routine. By the end, before I moved from Los Angeles in 2008, I was going every day. I'd wake up, ride my bike to class, come back, shower up and get to my desk to start editing. I was in the film world at that time and I'd edit for the day. And I remember sitting there editing and still just feeling my body being like, man, that was so awesome this morning that I did X. I remember my first handstand against the wall.
Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like.
Oh my God, I'm doing this. There's that thing, Derek. I know you know this. I know your listeners and your previous guests know this, but there's that point when your mind settles down in a yoga pose. And I've been using this recently in my classes. When you get comfortable being uncomfortable and you finally figure out how to shut things down and quiet them, and you're in something that requires some physical strength, right? Could be half moon pose. It could be crow pose, headstand, right? Any number of those things where you really breathe deeply. And you just summon all of that stuff up in your body and you're able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And you've been studying with somebody, let's say. And at that time, there was a guy named Stephen Friedman whose classes I took a lot. And I think it was in his class with him where he was like, oh, man, you got it. And I was like, I fucking got it. And I couldn't wait to go back and do it again and see like what more I could do.
There's an aspect of working on some of these poses that's quite physical, no doubt. But a lot of it, almost all of it, is really about technique.
Yeah.
And some of that technique comes from practicing little components of the pose first, like preparing your shoulders, preparing your wrists, your back. But also there's that developing the sense of how you feel and know what you feel. Like, can you really move from this spot into that spot in a safe way where you're in control, where you're not just like trying to leap across some creek you're trying to jump over? In yoga, a lot of times I feel like, or certain poses, you kind of want to just jump over that creek really quickly because you feel like, well, if I can just get to that place, my momentum's going to put me there.
Right.
And that's where the risk and the injury can happen. Let me go back to you here on your yoga experience. I mean, right out of the gates, you had a connection with it. obviously you're a curious, open person who wants to explore stuff, but you also probably had a sense that you knew there was something in it and a benefit to it. Over the years, as you've gotten older, so you're in your 20s, you're in your 30s, your 40s, I think you're probably early 50s now, how has the benefits of yoga changed in your experience?
Oh, well, I'm going to get to that. But first, I want to go back and button up something else, if that's all right. I mentioned earlier that there were seeds of yoga planted in the athletics that I had done.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started doing sun salutations for the first time, I thought, I know this. How do I know this routine? I called it a routine then, right? I know this thing. And I realized that our football coach, varsity football in high school, had this chart up on the wall in the locker room. Now, in my mind's eye, as I think about it, it could be confused. It had that sort of antique look to it, and it was a sun salutation series A. And that's what we were supposed to do as a group on the field before every practice. In fact, before every game. And the captain would be out there leading us through it. Now, we obviously weren't using Sanskrit or anything like that, but push-up position. They were calling out these other terms for it. But I realized this is a sun salutation. Absolutely. So that was one thing. The other thing was, as a trained actor, a theater actor, I studied up in Lenox, Massachusetts at Shakespeare and Company for one summer. And the Alexander technique was a very big part of my training. And rolling up through your spine from forward fold and those types of cues and a lot of breath work and body work and standing up and lifting through your crown of your head, all those sorts of things. I was like, oh, they're just pulling that from yoga and reassembling it into a way that works for an actor with their body. So it's amazing to see those connections along the way. And then I'm saying those things now when I teach. So to go to your question, how have I found the benefits of yoga now as an adult? So for me, just on a student level, I really do have to say, and I think it's overstated by a lot of people and maybe by me too, that in that time, 2005, 6, 7, and around in there, like it definitely, I feel like it saved me. It saved my life, you know? Because of the AFib, I was questioning my diet. Should I eat meat? Blah, blah, blah. So I was scratching. I was digging a little deeper. I picked up a book called Happy Yoga by Steve Ross. And there was a guy talking. It wasn't written from a women's point of view. And it was about diet. And it was about breath work. And it was about relationships and all that stuff. And about yoga and how yoga can be beneficial. The Steve Ross book really stood out to me. And so it immediately helped with my breath. I can tell you that. And that helped me then calm down other things in my nervous system, which I didn't really put all that together by then. But I remember that.
It helped you be able to see your breath as a way to calm the nervous system.
Yes. I mean, I can tell you for a fact that just walking through the studio door into the studio, I'm up the stairs, I've taken my shoes off, tucked them in the cubby hole, and walking through the door, my breath would calm down. Right? It was like just on a cellular level, being in that space, getting in the headspace, it was like amazing. And then I think I just felt better, like I said, in my body. And so seeing those changes and those incremental changes, because they are, and how they affected things, just helped me feel better. And I think it just gave me a better outlook on things. And it got me through the breakup and other ups and downs in Hollywood and stuff like that. I was like, I always knew I had that place as an anchor. And now, fortunately, I teach 6 to 8 classes a week on top of my regular life. So I don't have the opportunity to go be a student that much in terms of in a classroom.
So basically, you're busy like a lot of us. It's hard to find time to do some things in our life that we know we should be doing.
Yeah.
How do you find time now in your schedule to get enough yoga in to keep taking care of what Larry needs to take care of day after day after day?
So like how a lot of people struggle with the word success and what that means and how that definition is different and changes for a lot of people, my idea of what a yoga practice is and could be has changed a lot over the years, particularly the last 2 or 3 years as I've started to be a yoga teacher and balance everything else. Because as you mentioned, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a podcast producer, I have my own show, I produce another client's podcast, and then I'm a father and a husband and a son and all that kind of stuff. So my mentor and then another yoga teacher up here who I'm close with really tried to instill in me that your yoga practice is about quality rather than quantity. And as I've tried to personally embrace that, I then spit that back out in class. And so a lot of times for people in class, I'll take them through some easy warm-up thing. And I look at the clock and I say, folks, we've done that for 15 minutes. Could that be enough for your personal practice at home? Maybe it is. It's not today though, because we're going to go another 45. So buckle up, right? So for me, my yoga practice, because I don't have a lot of time to go do that, might be 20 minutes with yoga with Adrian, right? It might be walking my dog for an hour up the hill, breathing, perhaps without my phone, perhaps listening to your podcast. It might be reading a book about yoga, quite honestly. And that's one of the reasons I started teaching, was to have something in the week where I'm just thinking about yoga. I'm thinking ahead about yoga every day because I have to prepare for a class.
So what's yogic about going out and walking your dog?
You're connecting with another creature on some level. You are connecting with your surroundings and you're breathing as you go. And if you leave your phone, which I am a horrible example of someone who doesn't leave their phone behind, because I will try to roll calls, right? While I'm walking, I will listen to your podcast and a few others. If I can leave it behind, or at least just leave it in my pocket and just listen and look around and breathe. And again, really sort of connect more with my dog. He knows that. And I know that. And it's just the time to like, and maybe I'm thinking about yoga, or maybe I'm thinking about something else. Maybe I'm thinking about an edit that I have to make and I get the answer. That's what walking the dog helps me with.
That's a great observation about another animal, another living species feels the resonance of what you're putting out there. And I don't mean that in a woo-woo way. I just mean like, it's literally people know when they're paying attention. You know when somebody's multitasking when you're talking to them on the phone, or somebody's not totally present.
He can tell, man. I mean, he looks at me sometimes because he's the treat bag's at that end of the leash next to my wrist. So he sort of knows and he's looking at me and I'm not really looking down at him. So yeah, the other thing is then you're not available for people, right? And we're always available these days for people and for things and tasks and stuff.
We hit on it earlier, and I think it's obviously you are naturally curious. I can appreciate and feel the same way about wanting to know the background and the history and the context for why these things are, learning more about it. So reading about yoga, learning about yoga, which seems really esoteric. I know the first time I read the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali, I remember reading it thinking like, I have no idea what this is about. But once you are able to get a little bit of a foothold and some context and a reference, there's a lot to explore there. So for you, what is yogic about reading and learning about yoga?
Well, I think the first thing, as you dig deeper into yoga history and the science and art of yoga, right, is like you really understand, you learn about the eight limbs of yoga, which I'm going to be challenged right now. I would need another chai latte to rip off all eight of those. But you realize that the first few have nothing to do with postures, right? It's a frame of mind. It's like ahimsa is nonviolence toward others. It's nonviolence toward yourself. And then you finally get to the poses. And so in the West, we've just been conditioned to throw on our Lululemon pants and go to class and look cool and try to do headstand or crow or whatever the hell it is. And I try to remind people in my classes that it's not about that, because especially guys, oh, dude, I can't touch my toes. I can't do this, right? Never gonna, I can't, blah, blah, blah. So I teach now for the company that I work for. My corporate client has now hired me to teach classes for them. So I teach two 45-minute classes every Monday back to back. This is a medical device manufacturer. I got guys and gals working on the shop floor for 30 years. They come up to my second class, greasy fingers and stuff. They look like ZZ Top, some of these guys, and they're doing it. But they all came in and be like, oh, I don't know, dude. I can't touch my toes. They can't even sit cross-legged because their hips are so tight. So I'm in there trying to shove blankets under them, this type of stuff. But I tell them, like, it's not about touching your toes. That's not the goal. You have to reframe that. Think about lengthening. Can I get more length out of my spine? Can I stand up a little taller? Can I just take a few breaths? Just use this hour as a chance, particularly when I teach guys. Can I just use this hour as an opportunity not to think about my to-do list, honey-do list, whatever things are coming at you during the day, and just let that go and just take an hour for yourself, take 30 minutes for yourself. And I also tell people again, like, you know, the poses are just part of this whole thing. It's really about quieting your mind and relaxing your mind. The poses are there to open the channels of your body and work out the energy and the whole thing so that ultimately you can sit and commune with the universe or God or source, whatever your word of it is. That's the point of the poses, is just to get you out of your own way, basically. You work the gunk out of your system so you can do that. So for me, a long-winded answer, I just learn a bit more. It reinforces things that I've learned along the way. Then I learn some new things and those get reinforced.
There's tons to soak up. I still feel like I'm beginner's mind every time I sink into something new with yoga. I start to make more connections to why things are the way they are, how they're referenced. Then you realize there's different interpretations of some of these books. And then you understand more history. And then you realize, maybe there was some aspect of British gymnastics at the turn of the century, which has influenced some of the way it is here. And then you're like, some of this stuff is very Jungian psychology stuff. So it just kind of keeps opening new doors of things to start kind of thinking about.
Yeah.
And what's really gratifying about it is that it's endless. And so if you are somebody who is just scratching the surface and you're 31 or you're 49 or you're 60, like, your body may be changing a lot over the years, but your mind and your ability to start seeing the connections really becomes gratifying in a way that there's more than perhaps the perception of what you have of your life in front of you. And that unfolding can just be until the very last breath when you're 104 on your cushion or wherever you are. Like, it's just endless. It's comforting to know there's so much more beyond than what we see or feel. And you just got to keep following that curiosity.
And I think the more that you do yoga, the more that you actually do those poses, because you get these little incremental wins along the way, those actually make you be more curious and ask more questions and make you go a little deeper. Like, I've never, you know, skiing and I connected on a deep level. I've been doing it since I was a kid, but I've never had connections on the slopes like I've had in a yoga studio.
Has yoga complemented your experience on the slopes?
Absolutely.
How so?
I used to always be able to, like, ski on one. I raced, so it's a lot of training with, like, skiing on one ski and all that kind of stuff, and I can do that. I just also notice, like, my balance is like 50 billion times better. And what makes me nervous, I should say, is that I get people coming into class who are younger than I am and their balance is terrible. You kind of forgive it for older folks over 60 and whatnot, but, like, I got 30-year-olds coming in who can't stand on one foot.
And that stuff totally catches up. I feel like guys our age, I'm trying to tell, like, if you want to be the Dalai Lama when you're 75 years old, you got to work on your balance and your strength, your coordination now, because you can have a great life on the trail, on the slopes when you're 80, in your 80s, if you start doing this stuff now. And for guys in their 30s, sure, they might think this is not even a blip on their radar, but it should be.
And again, I think to tie back into skiing, just the breath again, just like breathing and moving. You start to just feel good doing those two things, breathing and moving, sun salutation.
Yeah.
Over and over and over. When I get people in classes, I just grill them on a Series A sun salutation. I just let the music roll and I'm like, okay, on your own now.
So Larry, this has been great. For anyone who's in the New York, Connecticut area, where can they find your classes?
I teach primarily at a studio called Sharym, Charym, Sharym Yoga Studio in Litchfield, Connecticut. And you can also hit me up at followyourdrishti@gmail.com. Drishti is DRISHTI. followyourdrishti@gmail.com.
Awesome. And I also will call out, Larry has a great podcast called Roadie Free Radio.
That's right. Roadie Free Radio. It's all about the behind the scenes of the music and film world. I'm a big music person. I use music in my classes. And yeah, so check out Roadie Free Radio. And Derek, thank you, man. This has been a great pleasure and honor to be on your show.
Larry, it's been awesome. Thanks again, man. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
So Larry is one of those guys who just gets it when it comes to yoga. It's not just about the physical practice. It's also about being connected to yourself and everything around you and staying curious and open along the way. We're going to be posting a bonus episode after this interview where Larry shares some of his great stories working with guys at his studio in Connecticut and also with his employer in New Jersey. And for more on Larry, check out his two podcasts, Roadie Free Radio, a weekly series on which he interviews the men and women behind the scenes of music and film, and also Follow Your Drishti, a yoga podcast that includes recordings of all of his weekly yoga classes. Anyhow, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I want to give a big shout out to my cousin Shane, who connected me with Larry a few months ago. Shane, thanks for making the intro, and I love you. Hey, if you want to hear more great conversations with guys who have a yoga practice, make sure you subscribe and follow us wherever you listen to your podcast, and check us out on Instagram at GTY Podcast.